Hey, everybody, welcome back to another Saturday show of Business and Legal Talk with
Leo and Claudine.
Come on, Claudine.
Here we go.
Good
morning.
Here
we go. Good morning.
How you doing?
Rocking.
Have you had your coffee today?
Always.
Great.
Always.
Welcome to another great show.
Yeah, this is going to be great. We have a lot of conversations with clients about, you know, stabilizing their business. And we've talked about that over the course of a number of shows is, you know, obviously our goal here is to create businesses that are sustainable. You focus on the profit. We focus on protecting the business. So we're always looking at risk. Always, always, always looking at risk. Always planning for the rainy day. And then not just the rainy day, but what happens when that rain continues to fall for an extended period of time. We now have a storm. And so what we really want to avoid that risk or mitigate risk. And so what we're going to be talking about today is debt and debt,
nice.
Debt and risk. And what is healthy debt? Is there a such thing as healthy debt? What is your risk factor? And when you start looking at going into debt, what are the reasons why you're going into debt? Because again, if the mill of money, if the clients stop calling, if the phone quits ringing, what do we do with the debt? And, you know, bankruptcy is not what we want to be looking at. Nobody does, I don't think. And, you know, there was a time, and we talked last week on the show, there was a time about 10 years ago that, you know, bankruptcy attorneys were popping up on, you know, three or four on a corner. You know, now you're hard pressed to find somebody who pushes bankruptcy. So that's an indicator of the market. It's changed. But I think a lot of people came out of that market with some fear of risk. I know a lot of people who were very intent on putting cash in their safe and in a safe location. Not just keeping it in the bank or not just putting it into some sort of an investment, but keeping cash around for that rainy day. So we really need to kind of explain what is debt? Obviously we know what debt is on the basic level, but when is it appropriate? When you're looking at getting debt, I know you have made the point on a number of occasions that the time to go get a business loan is when you don't need the business loan.
Because when you need it,
it's too late. It's too late.
Right.
So that's our topic for today. I'm excited about it.
Well, let's get into it. I got to start by reading this. It's just so funny. Americans who are already under record levels of debt are taking out wedding specific loans. Skyler Ramirez, this is just an article that we like to have the juice for you guys so you don't have to. So we actually go during the week and look for juice to talk about it on our shows, and this is one of them.
Right.
Skyler Ramirez has a loan for his house, his car, and now his fiancée's engagement ring. Nice. This 26-year-old had already picked up a diamond solitaire from Tiffany, of all places.
Right.
That set him back a pretty penny, right? When he happened upon an ad for a wedding-related loan while he was checking his credit score at Credit Karma, I thought, hey, I'm going to make a pretty sizable purchase. Maybe I should get a loan for it. I didn't want to be using up the cash or pulling money from savings or investment accounts. Huh. Is that a good thing? It took about 15 minutes to get approval for a five-figure loan. So,
five,
you know,
figure.
Well, when was the last time you walked? Have you walked into a Tiffany's? They'll charge you to go through the door, by the way.
Right,
breathing their oxygen is built into their pricing model.
Wow.
But you're not going to be able to walk away with anything unless you drop in at least $10,000. That's right. And they're all kind of hanging around the same malls. You know, like if the big cities, you're going to have the Salvatore Ferragno, your Gucci, your Cartier, your
Louis.
Tiffany. They're all hanging out together. That's a whole different crowd. Now, if you have $100 million in the bank and you want to burn through a few million and you want to buy a few diamonds, be my guest.
Right.
But if you're another thing is to borrow. Well, get this. An interest rate is not that bad at about 8%. It will take more than 3 years and $300 a month to pay it off. So here it tells you something about where we are as a society. And you know, this whole generation, I think we keep talking about, you know, the greatest generation, you know, the ones that were, you know, hoarding cash in mason jars. And then we went through the generation Xers, you know, that we saw our parents struggle, you know, like didn't want to borrow anything. We started borrowing with a little bit of trepidation, those who us were going to grow up in the 80s. And then the millennials, they're like, while we went the other way with our parents, millennials is a kind of an interesting thing. This generation, they are like, well, we understand debt. We don't know if we want it. So is that a good thing for the economy not to borrow? I don't know. But as a general rule, you know my position, I don't like that.
Right.
And I think there is such thing as good debt and bad debt.
Well, the safest position, you know, if you do what we do in the legal world, we are looking for protection against every what if. Us and insurance brokers, what we try to do when we draft a contract is we try to predict every what if that's possible and then have some sort of a resolution for that what if, so we don't get taken out by it. It's when the what if happens and you haven't thought about it and you haven't planned. So obviously the most safe position to be in is debt free. Completely. Because if the income slows down, you've protected yourself against it.
Correct.
But you can't always run a business that way. And there are times that people hold themselves back in their business development and growth because they're unwilling to utilize credit or debt.
Well, okay, so check this out. So back to this whole funny article about, I call it silly debt. I mean, why in the world would anybody get a loan call me crazy. I don't get it, but people are doing it. And by the way, I may be an outlier. Remember, there's this whole mob mentality. If I see enough people doing something, I'm going to want to do it.
Right.
It's like we can't help it. We're like sheep, right? Demand for wedding loans has quadrupled.
Really?
In the past year.
I can't even imagine.
This article is as of June 19th. What day is it? Oh, okay. So that's a few days ago. Not too long ago.
Yesterday. Wow.
Demand for wedding loans has quadrupled in the past year. He said, making it the company's fastest growing line of business. Couples borrow on average, are you ready for this? $16,000 and typically pay it off within 3 years. Interest rates range from 7% to 18%, making it a cheaper option for many credit cards. Well, it's true. If you're going to put a wedding on a 28% APR credit card,
yeah,
gosh.
Please don't.
18% sounds a whole lot better, right?
Yeah, please don't.
Excuse me, right? What is going on, Claudine? I mean, have you seen a lot? I mean, do you know about this?
No, I've never heard of it. And I do have children who are at, you know, marrying age, although they're not married or getting married right now. But
nor do we want them to get married right now.
Their friends are. And, you know, weddings are a part of the conversation on a regular basis. And I have not. I have kind of gotten accustomed to the idea that people spend regularly $20,000 on a wedding. And I
think you're selling yourself short. It's more like 30. Okay, hey, so keep going. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, 20 is kind of the number that is stuck in my head. And I think to myself, you know, that's quite a lot. I'm sure there's people listening going, just rolling their eyes going, that's not a lot at all. You know, because it's expensive. The party is very expensive. So I'm a little bit shocked that we're now, you know, it's one thing if you've saved over the years and perhaps your family is helping you out and so forth and you've got that money to spend, and that's what is available in your budget, but I just to go into debt over it.
I don't think so. Anyway, hang on. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We got some juicy stuff to talk to you about regarding debt. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine, where we dish out the good stuff about business and help you be profitable and sustainable. Hey, so listen to this. So we're on the topic of good debt and bad debt. So what is good debt?
Good debt is debt that earns income. So if you borrow $10,000 for a business venture and that $10,000 is going to make you $20,000, then that's good debt, because that means, one, the debt is able to be paid off.
So it's leverage.
So we can eliminate the debt when we're, you know, ideally in a short period of time or soon or immediately. But bad debt is debt that you take on and you get nothing for, or nothing lasting, no investment. So for example, car, you go into debt over your vehicle, well, it depreciates. So it's worth less when you bought it than the debt that you carry on it.
Don't even get me started with car loans.
I know.
You know that when you buy a brand new car and you drive it off the lot, the minute that you just, this steps off the lot into the street,
yep,
you already lost like 15%.
You do. And if you're going to do that, then there should be a reason, because, you know, obviously in business, we do have depreciations and things like that. And so there is a time to take on debt from a business perspective. And that's why you really, really need to be working with somebody who understands that. I think our society's general nature to not understand the numbers, excuse me, and not understand when we say 24% interest or 28% interest, it would be a lot more helpful if we knew what the dollar figure was, the actual dollar figure. So if the average U.S. credit card debt in 2019 is $6,300 and some change. So if you're carrying,
wow,
if you're carrying $6,000 on a credit card and you're at 28% interest, what additional amount? So you already spent $6,000 that you obviously didn't have to spend. And now you just spent 28% more than the $6,000. What is that number? And I think that, you know, we have a lot of rules and regulations about food labeling and ingredients and calorie counts and fat counts and carbohydrate counts and all of the stuff that we have to put on our food labels. I think it'd be fantastic if we had to put that on our credit card statements. and not just what is your minimum payment, because people look at the minimum payment and they think, oh yeah, I can do that. But we don't have any advisories on our credit card statements about, if you make the minimum payment, it's going to take you, you know, 900 months to pay this debt off. Like that should be a little bar graph right there.
You know what blows my mind? Speaking of credit card companies, there are so many of them and they keep adding new, and when more people keep getting into a market and the market never seems to be saturated, it tells you something about the industry, right? Every day that goes by, and after, do not mail me, please don't send me credit cards, I get an average 1 to 2 a day, every day of the week.
Isn't that
invitation
crazy?
From anybody, card and brand names I never heard of, you know, right. the Visa, the MasterCard, and 1,000 different variations. And when, why? Because it's a great business to be in.
So, hey, driving in today, I don't mean to interrupt you, but driving in today, I was listening to a radio program and they were talking about that there's a whole entire black market for credit card miles. Yeah.
How so?
I guess that, I honestly don't understand how it looks. I would have to read into it, but there is an entire online market of a black market. For credit card miles.
So say I have 50,000 credit card miles and I banked them. I don't want to use them. I can sell them to you.
Right, kind of like Medicare fraud.
I can cash in on it somehow and give it to you for 80 cents.
I know.
On the dollar.
I will do some research into
crazy.
That, and I will talk. We'll bring it up next week because I will do more looking into it. I when they were leading up to the story, and it was, they were talking about black market, and of course I automatically start thinking about contraband, or, you know. And I was, when they said credit card miles, I thought, well, how in the heck do you do that?
How does that work?
But you can go. Apparently, you can go online and. It kind of like they have done with food stamps in the past, where, you know, you pay $300 and you get $600 worth of food stamps because somebody's selling their food stamps. Credit card miles.
Wow.
So anyway, I totally went off subject on that.
Back to the wedding fiasco here. So what is driving this growth of this in burgeoning industry and wedding loans?
Well, the same thing that drives all bad debt.
Right. Well, listen, so weddings are getting more expensive.
Right.
No shock there, right? And people are waiting longer to get married. So it used to be, generally speaking, that the father of the bride was on the hook for paying for the wedding. Well, that's not necessarily the expectation anymore, because you may be 40 and dad is 70. And how is he going to be able to? He's been retired for 10 years or
and
whatever.
You have how many daughters?
I have one daughter.
You're off the hook? I've got one daughter. Are you saying, are we off the hook?
No, I don't think we're off the hook. Are we off the hook?
I don't know. Sounds like we might be off the hook for putting on that wedding.
Well, listen, so this lady, according to this article, Mary Naglicki got married in 1977. Her parents paid $10 per person for her reception. So 100 people, $3,000, right? Okay, so 300 people, you know, they do the math. It's not a lot. But she said that she will have to pay 11 times that for her daughter's November wedding. So you start to really see what's driving this ever increasing prices, right? And then you start to wonder, when I got married almost 20 years ago, I remember that the plate, you can actually get away with about $12 a plate.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that's what I mean, I think it's much more expensive now.
$20, $30
a plate for food. That's just the food.
Right.
Forget about the honeymoon, the DJ, the pictures, right, the wedding dress, the venue, the decorations, your bridesmaids, everything.
I would love to talk to somebody who has recently put on a sizable wedding and all the costs that are involved with that. I am sure that we've got some listeners out there probably just hollering at the radio right now.
Average debt per household topped $50,000 in the third quarter for the first time. This is as of this year.
And that's not including mortgages.
No. This is consumer debt.
Right.
Unsecure consumer debt.
Does not include cars.
I don't know. And it stayed above that level. So here's something to consider. However, though, average household debt is still below the pre-crisis high of $53,000. According to the New York Federal Reserve. So I think this is becoming an epidemic.
Well, I'm going to say that I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I think that business owners are maybe a group unto themselves and are probably the ones that are balancing out that statistic. Because I think by and large, business owners, particularly here in the Valley, who weathered the storms of, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and are much more conservative now with their debt.
I think so. And that's what I've seen. And I think it's almost like two different types of people. Those who just get consumer debt for the sake of getting debt.
Right.
And those who use a strategic debt as a means to get somewhere.
Right.
And those are the business owners. So speaking of which, I think it'd be nice to transition out to the business. Our favorite subject is business people, right?
Right.
So you were asking me earlier about factoring. Right.
Right.
And what role does it play?
Right.
And
business
when
factoring.
Do you need it? Right.
So explain what business factoring is, because I understand the concept and I know that people have done it. I just didn't put that label on it.
So, okay. So say you have, it all plays out in how you manage your AR, but say you have $100,000 worth of accounts receivable that it's outstanding. So you send all those invoices and $100,000 dollars is sitting on your balance sheet as an asset. You're going to collect it sometime in the future, but you need money today.
Right.
And everybody's due net 30, and you know that if somebody's due net 30, they're going to pay you net 45.
Right.
But so 100,000, so say I invoiced everybody today. So 45 days from now, I should be getting my 45,000. But guess what? It may be too late. I got payroll so what factoring is there's a third party that comes and actually buys out your accounts receivable.
Okay.
So, and what they do is they take ownership, or they secure, and they give you an advance. So saying that your AR is good, right? And you have good clients, and they, for whatever reason, they're going to take their sweet time in paying you, which they could if you let them, right?
Right.
You know what happens when you let somebody 35 days to pay? They'll take 40, and it's normal, because we forget. I mean, it's a human condition. We have to be reminded. But the problem is you're looking at your cash flow, and if you're actually doing cash flow and you know that 2 weeks from now you're gonna, the bottom is gonna fall off. You need to collect $50,000. So you sell, so the factoring company will give you, and there's that's a growing business, by the way. There is a host of companies, and I used to have a client that was dealing with that. That's how I became really familiar with it. But there is dozens of companies that do this. And actually, Jeff Bezos from Amazon actually invested in one of them. So that tells you he's a pretty sure investor. Anyway, so I'm going to advance you 80%. So I'm going to give you $80,000. I'm going to put the money back into your account tomorrow, $80,000. And then, but those receivables have now come to me. So I'm the third party. You no longer own your receivables. So you assign the rights of your accounts receivable to somebody, and they're going to immediately give you 80%. And then once people, you know, by the way, it goes, you know, the agreement is that it presumes that you're going to keep doing that with them. So they actually buy out your AR. You have an agreement, and all those AR checks from the customers go to a lockbox. They cash the check, and they actually recoup their money if your AR is good. And then when everything is, then they're going to give you the, so right now I gave you, you know, they gave you $80,000.
Right.
What about the other 20? Well, some of it is their fees.
Right. So they take their fees out of the 20.
It's not the cheapest money, let's just say.
I can just imagine.
But who?
What are the interest rates?
We're not talking about interest rates here. We're talking about
just like flat fees.
Flat, just like a negotiated fee. It could be 12%, 13%, 14%, 15%.
Essentially, it's hard money.
It's hard money.
It's hard money rates.
15, can you imagine? So your fees, $15,000 for basically helping you alone, because you know what it is like? It's like a payday loans. You know that this whole industry is highly...
Right, title loans. Payday loans.
So you need money and you have a free and clear car, right? Worth $5,000. They'll give you $3,000. They secure the deed on the car note. The pink slip.
Right.
They get to own the car until you pay the loan back. And they're going to charge you 40% APR.
So are we seeing more and more businesses do this? You're really on that end of it. I'm not yes. on that end. And businesses are essentially selling their invoices. I know in the legal industry, you can take out loans against settlements.
You can.
There are companies that will loan against settlements. So if we have an idea or we've negotiated a settlement and it's going to, you know, it's going to pay off at some point. I have heard of companies that will take a little bit higher risk and loan money against a lawsuit, but I haven't dealt with them, but I've heard that they'll take a little bit more risk in that the lawsuit hasn't concluded. We haven't executed the actual settlement yet. But we know that we're going to be in a certain financial place. And so I know from a legal side in our industry, there are people that will basically lay odds against, you know, money that's supposed to be coming in the future.
So to answer your question before we go into break, factoring has a place somewhere in the spectrum of loans. So we're talking about raising capital two different ways. You either go the loan way or the equity way. Equity is actually you're selling a portion of your company.
Right.
We'll get into that later. But on the actually borrowing, and you most likely will personally guarantee, the cheapest money will always be a bank.
So what do you know? What kind of vetting do these companies do in terms of how solid is the AR? Are there certain industries that they stick in, which, you know, the average invoice is a small amount, so there's a higher chance it's going to get paid.
It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Right.
So there are companies that go after certain industries like healthcare, right? If you are a home health agency and contracted with Medicare.
Your money's solid. It's coming.
Solid money coming from the government and you're in a pinch. It's going to be cheaper than somebody who is in a different type of industry where there's a little more uncertain and there's more fallout, more collection issues. They're going to be more expensive. So, but you start with the cheapest money, which is the more stringent. So the cheaper the money, the higher the requirements. The lower the requirements, the more expensive the money.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
So you're looking at a bank, and we're going to be talking about the remainder of the show as to what is the number one reason I get involved with a company is we are at a fork in the road. We want to grow. How do we grow? Do we sell a portion of our company or do we borrow?
Right.
So that's what we need to be fleshing out. But for right now, just know that there's so much money out there and you can get it. But hold on. We'll be right back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Welcome back. We're having some fun today. So much money.
Money.
It's always fun talking about money, right?
Money.
This is Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. If you just joined us, we've been, we're all about helping businesses, giving you the edge on the competition, the edge on the market, and how to really game everything to your, you know, your way so you can be profitable and sustainable, which is what we preach every Saturday at 10 a.m. here in Power Talk. So where we left it before the break is how to, okay, so good debt, bad debt.
Right.
Right. Good debt takes advantage of an opportunity.
Right.
So I ask a lot of questions when I'm dealing with, you know, when I speak and I'm asking for just dealing with potential clients is what do you want? Right. It all starts with the, what is the vision? Where are you going? How, you know, the whole market, are you in the right place? I mean, because actually banks, as well as venture capitalists, you know, we haven't talked about equity, but when you're selling a portion of your company,
right?
Banks used to be a little more, we like the financials and I think your growth is good. You know, solid industry. All right, that sounds good. You're going to personally guarantee it? Fine, we're okay. Now, banks are a little more judicious. They want to know, is your business going to be around five, with so much disruption going on?
Right.
And some, you know...
You a fly by night? Or are you a new thing? Or
are you going to be around?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, there are certain things that you need to evaluate as a business owner, whether or not you can actually support or use debt to your advantage.
Okay.
One is, are you growing? How is your growth? Year over year.
Right.
Like if you did $1 million 2 years ago and you're doing 900,000 today.
Right.
Should you be concerned? You're going backwards.
Right.
Right. So before people talk about loans, but not realizing that the number one source of business money for your business is your own business. And long before I even talk to people about, you know, they almost have to talk me out of a loan. Why do you think you need a loan? And let's look at your balance sheet. You know, you look at your ratios. You know, I talk about this ratios till the cows come home. You know, I know what a bank is going to ask before the bank is going to ask.
Right.
Isn't that power?
Right.
So I go, all right, well, you want a loan. What was your net income? So if the debt to income or the debt service coverage ratio, which is the ratio that the bank wants to see between your net income and how much you can afford to in your principal and interest, is a very important thing.
Right.
And that is, it varies from 1.2 to 1.3. Meaning that if you had, so think about it, if you had $100,000 worth of annual debt, principal and interest, the debt service. So you must have, so say, over the span of a year. So in 12 months, your debt payments are $100,000. Must be a pretty big size loans. So you're looking at about $8,300 a month to the debt service and a 5 to 7. It could be.
And that's just your payment. So you're just saying $100,000 of payments on your debt.
Yes, per year. It's about $400,000 to $500,000, depending on the interest rate, about $400,000 to $500,000. If you're looking at that, okay, so here's the acid test. If your debt service is $100,000 a year, what will your net income need to be even before you qualify for a loan? At least 20% higher.
Okay.
So $120,000 will support, in theory, right?
$100,000 worth of debt.
Honestly,
seems really
risky.
Scary. Yeah.
Right, but the banks will lend to that. But what here's the shocker. A lot of people don't even know what their net income is because they haven't been doing a good job monitoring it.
Right.
And you know that the bank is going to want to know, okay, what is your debt service coverage ratio on the proposed loan? And they want you to tell them that. What is your debt to equity ratio? You know, how much debt can you afford to have for every dollar of equity of your money that you put into, you know, that you retain earnings, your net income that turns into retained earnings.
Right.
So it depends on the banks. It could be one and a, it could be $2.5 to $3.5 of debt for every dollar of equity. And the other one is your current ratio, which is your current assets over your current liability. So if something hit the fan,
right,
and it's
do you
over,
have enough assets to,
the
to
zombie apocalypse, and then right. you have to liquidate your business? Do you have, if we were to liquidate everything, do you have enough cash and receivables and anything that can be converted to cash within 12 months and liquidate to pay the stuff that is due within a year, like your payroll liabilities and your credit cards and your accounts payable?
So that's a two and a half to one.
That ratio is at least 1.5 to 1.
1.5. So 1.5.
To one is what a bank wants to see in your current ratio, which is your current liability, your current assets of your current liabilities.
So you
1.5
need 5%
to
more.
One. I'm going to write this down. 2.5 to 1, and then 1.2 to 1. This is like Jeopardy.
Right.
So 1.5 to 1. It's your current ratio. If you're listening to the, write this down because that's what banks want to see.
And if you forget, just give us a call.
Yeah, just give us a call, right?
We'll repeat look, it.
We'll repeat it. 1.5 to 1 is your current ratio. 2.5 to 1 is your debt to equity ratio. And 1.2 to 1 is your debt service coverage ratio. So simple math, a $400,000 to $500,000 loan, depending on the APR, you have to have at least $120,000 a year or $10,000 a month worth of net income. But there's the one thing that people neglect. Well, look, my financials look great. And look at all the money that I'm making in the net income, you know, making money hand over fist, but there is not collected money, you know, it's sitting on your AR and you're not collecting it.
Right.
Do you think the bank is going to find out?
Well, yeah, and they're probably, I mean, presumably you would have had that on your balance sheet as an asset.
Presumably. If you put in your invoices in there. Oh, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day. So
when you're going to get a loan, do you typically have to factor all three of those?
Yes.
Before you go in?
I won't stop there.
Okay.
So I ask those questions, right? If you came to me, Leo, I want to get a loan, I would ask those.
I might do that next week. I'm just here.
Oh, please. don't do that to me right now. So I go, well, tell me about your business and tell me about what opportunity are you seeking? Talk me into it. Imagine I'm the bank. I haven't play a loan.
Right.
Basically sell me as to why they need money.
Right.
So I go, all right, well, tell me the story. So we have, I'm going to use a random example. So we have we provide a service, say, you know, it's an accounting firm. We provide a service and we have a complementary tax practice that we can add to the business, and I can buy it for $500,000. And clients have been around for 10 years. They're not going anywhere. And I'm going to borrow $500,000 to buy $500,000 that actually churns over $500,000 every year.
Right, right.
And the average client stays for 10 years. So, and then I'm going to think, well, I'm going to borrow $500,000 to purchase something that is going to be $500,000 every year for the next 10 years. So regardless of the interest rate, what is the return on that investment?
Right, right. So, okay, so we see this probably in the farm community quite a lot. You go buy land. We're going to go into debt to get the land. We're going to invest X amount of dollars to plant.
To develop the land.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Or, yeah, also develop land, whether it be farming or buildings. But we know that we're going to go into X amount of cost to get to the point where the land is producing. And then we know it's going to produce for X amount of time. We can project what the yields are going to be,
right.
And we can project what we can sell the crop for to some extent. That's the one variable. So as long as your ratios are in there and can accept some variation in what you're selling the crop for, then that it would be a good debt. And that's how we are going to grow and step to the next level.
Okay, I'm going to give you a red flag.
Okay.
Right? And for the listeners, whenever I hear the word working capital, scares me.
Working capital, meaning?
I need money for working capital. You know that there's actually loans.
What,
you know,
define working capital? What? How do you
exactly. What is working capital?
Okay.
Do you see what I'm getting at? It's a nebulous term.
Okay.
I want to know, if I'm advising you on a loan, I know I need to know specifically what it's for. I need a loan because I'm falling short and I'm negative on my cash flow every month and I need just a loan to get me by for working capital. I say, no.
No.
You're fast on your weight. So you're going to add loan to something that's already not working. First of all, is your business making money?
Right.
Because if it's not making money, no amount of loan is going to cure it.
Right. And we've talked about that before.
Extensively.
You know, that's kind of a pillar of the business model is, before you do anything, is your business making any money?
Right. I heard of a great little business, okay? And you know, once you've been around like me for a while and you've seen different profit and losses and you've seen different balance sheets and you heard about different industries, some trends begin to emerge.
Right.
People start talking about, hey, you know, talking about the machinery business, right? And if I invest $10,000, say I bought it in cash, and I can rent this for, and I can safely get $5,000 a year on this machinery that I bought out of cash. How long would it take for me to recoup my investment?
Right.
2 years. And the life and the life expectancy of the machine without breaking down is 10 years.
Right.
And I know I can get $5,000 every year for the next 10 years.
Why
you think that would be? Why wouldn't you do that?
Why? That was my question. Why wouldn't I do that?
So you make $50,000 or 5x your investment. Now you got my attention.
Got it.
Right.
This equals good debt.
So this equals good debt. So it is.
So train your mind to think of debt in this manner.
So you're, as a business owner, here's how I want you to think. If I borrow $10. No, if I, let me put it this way. If I came to you and I said, Claudine, if you give me $1,000, I'm going to do something with it and turn around and make $3,000 in 24 hours. Will you give me, and you believed me, will you give me $1,000?
I would.
And I'm going to give you back $3,000.
Right.
Right. Will you give me $2,000 if I'm going to bring you $6,000?
Of course.
Right. And it goes on and on. So if you're convinced that if you lend me money and you understand the business model and you're going to make 3X, does it really matter? I mean, at some point you're going to say, no, I don't want to put that $100,000 out to work.
Right, right,
but
right.
But you might be settling for $50,000 because it's about return on investment. Well, banks are no different.
Right. So you've
except
just put,
that they don't want equity.
You've just put yourself in the shoes of the bank. And so as long as you can do that from the very beginning and do it effectively, you're going to get your loan.
But do that exercise. Don't do it for the bank.
No, no.
Do absolutely. That exercise for yourself. So anyway, we need to go to break. I hear. So, hey, stay tuned. We got some more stuff. I promise you, we're going to bring it home. Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Welcome back, guys. I can't believe we've been 45 minutes talking about this, and I can talk about this for hours.
I know.
I never get bored of money. I'm like, Family Ties, Alex P. Keaton.
Oh, right.
3 years old, I went in contemplating money.
Right.
I'm like a little Alex P. Keaton.
Well, I think the concepts that we're kind of vetting out here and that we're working through is really about how to train your mind. Because we don't get any real financial training as, you know,
you don't.
Unless your family is or you've particularly sought it out. We have, we're conditioned to want. And, you know, as we were talking about earlier in the show, the reason why people are spending and taking out loans to have weddings is because they're no longer satisfied with going to the Justice of the Peace and paying $100 for a license and having, you know, at the courthouse steps. I mean, so then if from there, well, we wanted a party and people were okay having a mild party and it was fun. You had some friends and family and we get married and so forth. And now we're at a point where people are no longer satisfied with that. We have to have this elaborate $30,000-$40,000 party. Wedding.
And what is the return on investment?
And what is the return investment? And so somehow
love and happiness.
Somehow as a society we have conditioned our minds to think along those lines. And that somehow we justify it, we accept it, and people are obviously doing it.
Right.
So conditioning
and there's
your mind,
a market for it.
Right. Conditioning your mind as a business owner and frankly just as a regular person who has to deal with debt. When you look at it, why am I going into debt? What is this debt going to bring me? And how is this debt going to bring me more than what I paid for it?
So let me give you, let me put this whole concept of lending in marketing terms.
Okay.
Okay. So stay with me. If I came to you today and I told you, Claudine, if you give me $1,000, I'm going to turn around and invest it in some marketing gimmick, and I'm going to bring you back $3,000. And I'm going to take a little from the top for my services. And if you believe me and you know I was good at it, will you give me $1,000?
Yeah, particularly if you were going to bring me $3,000
so that's
tomorrow.
300 times, you know, it's 3X,
I don't want to wait,
right?
For it.
300% growth.
Right.
And you're $1,000. Okay, so if I told you, well, I can do the same with $2,000.
Right.
You still do it, right?
Of course.
Now, if you were convinced that my system works, and then I say, well, what about $10,000? I'm going to bring you $30,000. And it goes on and on and on. At some point, you're going to say, well, I don't care how much the return. I can only part way with so much. I don't have the liquidity.
Right.
I'm going to done with $30,000. You can bring me back $90,000. But there is a commitment in understanding from the other side on how to turn that investment into something, whether you borrow it or not. So no different with banks. Banks think about it that way, is like, how solid, how certain am I that if I give you $100,000 to your business, you're going to pay me back my interest plus my principal.
Right.
There is methodology that we can all learn from the banking system and how they do it, because they also have run a business, right?
Right.
They borrow money at a cheaper rate and they sell it to us in terms of a loan. And it just so happens that their product is money.
Right, right, right.
But
right.
The methodology helps. So this whole concept of lifetime value of your customer over the cost of acquiring a customer, I think it can serve us all if you're borrowing.
I agree.
So for instance, you need to know for yourself what the lifetime value of your customers is.
Right, we've talked about that.
We talked about it in length.
And how to get them and the cost of getting them.
So if you knew how to fish for acquire the right customer, if you knew that if you went to a certain place and you spoke for 20 minutes and you invested $1,000, you would walk away every time with a $5,000 client, will you do it?
Absolutely.
Right, then will you do it in two different? Now, can you clone yourself and be in two places at once and show up for 20 minutes and make $5,000 twice?
Whatever I have to do.
Right? Only if you knew that works, right? Why don't we take our time to study our business and know what makes money for our business?
Right.
Then borrowing becomes incidental.
Right.
This is just fascinating. I think as a business owner, you should have lunch or coffee or, you know, breakfast with as many people as you can and learn something from them. And if you go into a place and you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong room, right?
And I make it a habit to hang out with people that are smarter than I am.
Right.
And I met with this
huge advocate,
with this entrepreneur that is probably going to build a $1 billion company in the Central Valley,
right,
in the next few years. And he told me that his methodology for raising capital is like, I have figured it out down to, I have dialed my business model to and within inches. And if I know that if I tweak this thing in my marketing funnel, if I do this thing with my other app, all these knobs that he turns, I can turn $1,000 into $4,000. And I do it over and over, and I've done it hundreds of times. So when he went and got a line of credit with the bank and he sat down, he had the bank eating at the palm of his hands within 20 minutes. Why? Because they were absolutely convinced, as he was, that it wasn't even a, there was almost no risk.
Right. And you know what? Sometimes that comes along with a particular type of industry. And if you're good in your industry, so if you are out there and you're in that industry, you know, that's great. You're fantastic.
But,
a lot of people are not in that industry, and they need to put in the legwork to putting themselves in the shoes of the bank and putting on the performance and the presentation that the bank says, oh, I want a piece of that.
Correct.
As opposed to
just want to get paid.
Right. As opposed to going in with the opposite posture, whereas you're trying to get something from them and they sit back in the chair and go, nah, I'm not really sure if I'm, you know, I don't know I want you to play with me.
It's a sales job.
It's
a sales job with you. You start with, and you know,
with your internal workings.
Right. You have to understand. You should know better than anybody how to make money in your business. If you need somebody else to tell you how to make money in your business, you don't know your business well enough. Maybe nobody should be giving you any money.
Right.
But if you're convinced that you know your business and you're actually, and you have a track record, and it was interesting because I was last night listening to a banker speak and somebody was giving a spiel about their business and they were already talking about the profit and loss for this calendar year today. You know, this things are great and what do you think? Am I bankable? And the banker goes, well, I don't know enough. It sounds like you're doing great. And, you know, I would do this and that. But I need to know that you've been successful for a while. I want to see 3 years worth of financial statements.
Right.
I want to see all of the financial statements. And I want to know what you're going to collateralize it with. And then I want to know about your personal credit history. And then I want to know if you have other assets and all this. The bank wants to make it so sound of a loan that you, short of an atomic bomb falling into your business,
right,
they would collect every penny of it.
Right, right.
Because they don't want chargebacks.
Right.
They don't want loans going bad. But if you have to ask the bank to figure out how to make money for your business, then you really can't. You're a liability.
Right.
You're not an asset to the bank.
Sitting at the bank asking for money is the wrong place for you to be.
Yes, yes. So people talk about, hey, Leo, you know, what do I need to do to get a loan? You know, and they start telling me about their business FICO, their business score, their personal score, and they know all about the bank, and even they know about the funders, and they gather the financial documents, and they even have all the legal documents at the disposal. They even have all the financials, and they have plenty of collateral,
right?
But they don't have a strong business plan.
Right. Oh, man, we have talked about business plans. Are you talking business plan or business model?
Well,
maybe a little of both.
It is embedded into the business plan that you actually have
exactly
your business model. And your business model is just, to me, in simple terms, is how do you make money?
Let me ask you a question, because yeah. I had this happen recently, and it made me really kind of, it took my breath away when the subject first came up. I have a client who I work with who was negotiating a loan, sizable multimillion-dollar loan with a bank, and the subject of one of the members of the bank, one of the executives from the bank, sitting on the board of directors for this business came up.
Wow. Okay.
And it made me, at first I went, what? Wait. I don't know if I like that idea. And I didn't say anything at first, and then kind of resonated, and finally ultimately ended up broaching the subject. And have you ever experienced that? Have you ever had, when working with a bank or working with
a client
trying to get a loan, having the subject of one of the executives being on the board? I could absolutely see why they would. But I could also absolutely see, from my perspective, I say absolutely no way. There's no way. I'm in a business
relationship. Without any conflict of interest?
Yeah. I'm in a business relationship with you. You don't need to know all of the internal workings of my business. You don't need to sit on my board.
Yeah,
That's a little.
And it actually happened to you?
It hasn't happened yet.
No, you don't.
I have a feeling that the brakes have been, I put the brakes on that enough. I don't I don't think it's going to happen. It certainly hasn't happened yet. It would certainly happen over much protest for me. But I thought that was it didn't take everybody else in the room the way it took me. But I'm, you know, the nature of my business is to be suspicious and to look for liability and look for, you know, how is this whole thing going to go wrong? So I just was curious if you had ever come across that, where that suggestion has been made either by the bank or the offer has been made by the company in an effort to get a loan. Say, hey, Mr. Banker, how would you like to sit on our board just so you can kind of oversee everything? No.
Never.
I'm so glad we agree on that.
Yeah, no. So there's a time and place for everything and the strategic moves. That's not one I would highly endorse. Now, that is different. One thing we didn't talk about at all today is about raising capital via selling a portion of your company, whether it's private equity, venture capital, whether it's seed money. And some venture capitalists and even some angels will want to have a seat on your board to make sure that they have a say.
Correct.
And how their money is being deployed. And
correct. But keep in mind, the difference there is a loan is being paid back, and it's being paid back with interest. When you purchase money or purchase equity, you're not getting that money back. You purchase the equity. Mm-hmm. What you're getting in exchange for the money is the equity.
You're buying a future return.
Right.
Something.
Exactly.
So I
can understand why you would want to have at least some oversight.
Well,
nowadays, it's not a loan.
No, you know what? It's not about. I have changed my position. Money is not money for money's sake. If you're going and raising capital and you're actually not talking to a bank, you go to a bank because you need money and you want to make sure that you can pay them back. But when you go to get equity and raise equity is when you want money and expertise.
Well, that absolutely as well. But it's money that the business is not paying back. What the business is going to pay is ideally dividends.
Correct.
Profits.
Or a way for a business, an investor to give you, I'm going to give you $100,000 with the hope that you're going to pay me five times more what I put in.
Right.
So I
understand why some of the quote unquote repayment is connected to some oversight. I see that.
But never on a bank. And
not
I would,
on a
and
loan.
I would never suggest it. I think it's a bad thing. It's a bad strategy. I think the bank is there to meet a need, and if you're bankable, why not get a loan? But don't go to get a loan when you need it because it's too late.
And from a legal perspective, from the attorney perspective, you know how long and how voluminous those loan documents are, and you bet that if there's not a clause somehow in there that says, you know, we can call the note due for a whole list of reasons. And one of those reasons happens to be that I'm seeing certain decisions being made by the board.
Oh.
That, you know, I see that there's a real possibility that you could have problems with your loan if you're not operating the business the way that particular person
correct
sees fit.
Man, what a heavy subject. So I hope this helps everybody today. And you know what? More than the money itself is be disproportionately intentional as a business owner about making money for your business.
Making money. It's
either
all
you have a profitable business or you have a very expensive hobby. So I hope that helps you guys today. This has been a great show. Thank you, Claudine. And I hope you guys have fun too. You have been listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. And I'll see you next Saturday.
Have a great week.
Have a great week.